What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Market moving insight and analysis. Join Jim Cramer, David Faber, and me, Carl Quintanilla, on the opening bell hour of CNBC's Squawk on the Street. Good Wednesday morning. Welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm Carl Quintanilla with Jim Cramer and David Faber. Earnings season officially kicks off today. Some push and pull on futures. JP Morgan, Delta, Bed Bath all in focus, even as PPI runs hot, up 11.2 year on year. We got oil back above 102. Our roadmap begins with JP Morgan reporting results. Shares under some pressure. We're going to dig through the numbers.
Plus, why one Fed president is warning that it's a fantasy to think modest rate rises can combat inflation. We'll explain that. And Delta Airlines flying high, expecting to return, get this, to a profit. Imagine that as more travelers return to the skies. The company's monthly revenue also exceeding pre-pandemic levels, Carl, for the first time since March of 2022.
JP Morgan is the lead, of course. Earnings do miss. Revenues beat. First quarter profit down 42, driven by increased costs tied to bad loans and market upheaval caused by the war in Ukraine. Jamie Dimon strikes a note of caution in his remarks, says, quote, we remain optimistic on the economy, at least for the short term. Consumer and business balance sheets, as well as consumer spending, remain at healthy levels, but see significant geopolitical and economic challenges ahead due to high inflation, supply chain issues, and the war in Ukraine. Jim, you've been framing it as the credit reserves on one hand, the buyback on the other.
Yeah. I mean, look, there's no doubt about it. When he buys back $30 billion, he believes. And that's long term. He's not going to buy it short term. But when you look at it, you say, oh, my God, he was on the wrong end of the nickel trade. Holy cow, he's building reserves, $900 million. I thought that we weren't going to do that if the consumer's that strong and the 5% loans. So, David, I put it to you.
Put it to me? Well tell me.
You're my partner.
Yes, I am. Always.
All right, Carl, I put it to you. No, come on. Everything was pretty good, especially, by the way, equities, which really shocked me. But he's talking his own stock down. By talking about
the challenges in the broader economy.
Gloom.
Overall. Yeah.
Gloom and doom.
But he does that. I mean, listen, one of the things we appreciate about Jamie Dimon is you do seem to get it fairly straight from him. And so there is that. The stock has never recovered from the last quarterly earnings,
right,
where there was a lot of concern about expense. That is not going to be the case here, I don't believe, Jim, in terms of additional expense or expense coming in way above where the estimates have been. Obviously, a lot of that had already been reflected in perhaps estimates. And again, the stock price never fully recovering. They did add to loan loss provisions in a fairly significant way, perhaps as well, reflective of what Mr. Dimon is talking about on the call in terms of concerns about the overall economy.
But remember what drove it down last time? Was he had to increase his spend on technology. This time, not really a focus. But if you think, the way I would play it. Let's say I am a CEO of another bank. Well, I will be sure not to mention the long term. Because if you want your stock down, you just say, hey, listen, I'm worried about. I mean, he didn't mention Zelensky by name. He didn't talk about the lockdown in China. But I read that and I said, boy, is he worried about Ukraine? Oh, man, he's scared about China. And I didn't want to hear that. Because those things could get better or worse. They don't have to necessarily both get worse.
Right. Certainly, the reserve buildup is a change directionally from recent quarters. As Jim mentioned, trading was a beat. Investment banking, though, a bit of a miss.
Yes.
Mortgage demand is going to be a worry as affordability takes a hit. I don't know if you saw mortgage apps, but we got mortgage origination, the Bankers Association says, will probably be down by a third this year.
Yeah, and the refinance is awful. I mean, really awful, down 60%.
Down 60.
I thought bright side was it decreased only 1.3% week to week, given the fact how fast rates are going up. But I find it quizzical that you can say that you should increase your loan loss reserves and at the same time say the consumer is very strong. But then I worry, and I think, David, did you know they're on the other side of the nickel trade?
No, I didn't.
Can you elaborate?
No, I wasn't aware of that. And so we can take that into account.
Who was on the nickel? You remember?
Yes, I believe I do. I'm not going to share because I don't want to be
Jeopardy,
wrong.
Jeopardy King does not
but I'm pretty confident
Jefferson.
I know.
All right,
actually,
what I'm worried about.
Who is on the nickel?
Who's Jefferson? It's
Jefferson.
I don't know. No one uses nickels anymore.
No.
But I looked at the exposure he had to that, and I said, oh, my God, Tempest in a teapot?
That's a deep track right there.
That is way up from the, way back. The commentary this morning, and obviously a lot of it will depend on the tenor of the call, which is ongoing right now, is generally positive. I mean, Goldman Sachs, for its part, says, listen, we expect questions on the path for capital markets normalization, but frankly, we think overall this is not bad, and the stock conceivably should trade fairly well on these results.
I agree.
You got Bank of America saying stock reaction should be positive. We believe results should be viewed positively, although the group continues to trade on macro sentiment. Net interest margin guidance is unchanged. Net interest margin was, as you'd expect, a bit improved as a result of obviously
a rise in
rates. Fed
governor and his brother saying rates have got to go up. That's fabulous for J.P. Morgan.
Right.
Why would you sell that stock before a big buyback kicks in and the possibility that short rates are going to go up and he's got a huge deposit base? Why?
Only because you believe the economy is going to go into a significant downturn.
Right. Right.
And not reflective of loan demand right now, which was up actually for the first time in a while.
And the consumer, he should go listen to Matt Boss at his own company, who does he does retail, who says the consumer's incredibly strong. Semblist, equity strategist, Eye on the Market's not coming with this analysis.
We're going to talk a little bit later about the consumer in more detail through the eyes of Delta, Jim. But
right.
But also through the eyes of CarMax yesterday
right.
and Bed Bath today.
Right. Well, Bed Bath is, let's just say, the supply chain problems there were awful. And the fact that this quarter's already started off bad is awful. Bye Bye Baby is good. David, I think you'll love this. Do you know what they did a lot of this quarter?
I don't. The same way I didn't know who was on the other side of the nickel trade.
Okay, they bought back a huge amount of stock. There's only 80 million shares now. Now, wasn't that one of the things that you used to, I used to say maybe the stock could be a takeover
you
one
did
day?
Did many years ago.
Well,
we talked
we
about it and it creeping buyback. Yeah.
So you have your friend Ryan Cohen in there. What's
Oh, yeah. He's my buddy. Yeah. You know that. He's going to go frog ice cream cone.
Ryan Cohen.
Gorilla. I think.
Two companies that missed the quarters. Ryan is in there. Getting it done. Don't forget Harmon. They own Harmon. Ulta, Sephora, Harmon.
What?
Harmon is a kind of a cosmetic and drugstore.
Okay. Okay.
So, how about that Delta?
Yeah, well, really quick, just to put a coda on Bed Bath. Comps down 12. Gross margins miss badly. Jim, they even have a metric. Gross margins excluding supply chain costs.
No, it was horrible. And I like Mark Tritton, and he's remade the stores. So they're good, but you need the merchandise, which always helps. I mean, when you're a retailer, I remember the great Mickey Drexler once saying, you got to have the inventory, but you just can't have too much inventory. They have way too little inventory. And look, what's really happening there right now is I think that they have to really start coming to grips with the fact that the sum of the parts are worth significantly more than the whole. Because they've got a couple good divisions.
All right, coming to grips with something doesn't mean that you're going to do anything about it. I'm not quite sure what your implication is.
Someone is going to come to grips for them, is what I'm saying.
You think so?
Yes, I do.
And it won't be Ryan Cohen?
Be Ryan Cohen and company. He's not man by himself.
No. Jim, before we transition to Delta, the broader market and yesterday's action, if we could just get to that briefly. I had a couple of calls this morning, and you hear this, no incremental buyers. Have you heard that line before?
Yes, I've heard people are staying away.
It sounds like, all right, give me another explanation. But is it real? Is it a thing? And, the hedge funds right now are all netted out. A lot of them are just, their nets are very low, so to speak. They're not buyers, sellers, or nothing. So
I think
maybe they're not incremental buyers.
No, I think there's a really important pivot going on. Got to get out of tech. They're all in tech.
Right.
And then you got to get into things they don't like. Like, they don't want to buy Humana. A nice upgrade today. You know, they're not looking at Pulte. I mean, they're just not. So they have nothing to do because their stocks aren't working.
And any takeaways from that, the market sort of move yesterday? And we looked like we were...
I thought that interest rates were good. I prefer markets that open down. I got up this morning, I don't know, 4 o'clock, futures were flying. And I'm like, on what? On what? Why were the futures up big yesterday? On what? On a hideous CPI? Hideous.
Well, we were looking for that second derivative on core, and we got it. We got a bunch of reports, Goldman and J.P. Morgan saying peak inflation, but that leads us to PPI today.
How do you say that with PPI so hot?
11.2 year-on-year. That is the biggest gain on record. Ex-food energy up 9.2 year-on-year. We were looking for 8.4, Jim. And Kathy Wood yesterday on Closing Bell talking about the impact of inflation and interest rates on her fund. Take a listen.
I think our ilk of stock is going to do very well if interest rates back up a bit more. And the reason I say that is we do believe cyclical inflation is near a peak. If you look at last year, this time, April delivered a 0.9% CPI read. Okay, so that's our comparison. And now we're seeing used car prices fall. I think energy even is down month to month. So I think we're starting to see cyclical turn down.
So that's Kathy Wood, Goldman, J.P. Morgan, and Gundlach yesterday, Jim. That was four people in just one day.
Well, it's hard to be worse. I when every category, well, see, used cars, big category. But, okay, so what did she do yesterday, Kathy Wood? She bought Stratasys, okay? A three-dimensional, 3D company. She didn't do well in the previous one. She's buying Stratasys. Yes, her company is not going to be hostage to inflation. But it's hostage to being Stratasys. It's not a great company. I mean, I think there's two things going on with Kathy Wood. There's her long dated, and then there are the stocks that she's buying now that seem to have very little vision. I mean, I thought she liked Twitter. New little shake up at Twitter, activist at Twitter. Now she doesn't like Twitter.
Well, she was selling before we knew about Elon's filing.
How about this? She's inconsistent.
Yes.
About that.
Okay. That's a fair point. Kind of like your combo today. Very nice.
That's the first substantive thing you said to me today.
Well, I'll tell you another one now, which is Carl mentioned Musk, you mentioned Twitter. If he actually was buying on Monday,
isn't that a violation?
Conceivably, we should get some sort of notification today and a filing. Either if he passed 10%, a Form 4. Also, remember, if you go up by 1% on a D, you should be filing. It could be as soon as 2 days. Of course, nothing says he will. Nothing says he did. And nothing says that he'll file on time if he did.
Right.
Given his potential violations in the past. But let's keep an eye open because it is possible. Then also he might even, he has different filing requirements. Form 4, Form 3s, obviously under the 13D right. as well. But it might give us some sense if we do hear anything that he was doing more buying because we're still trying to figure out what went on there in terms of he was on the board, he was off the board.
The fundamentals are not that good, but they can get better. His stock's not 50 anymore.
No.
But in terms of what about this peak inflation, I want to believe. I hope I believe. Hope is not a strategy. I look at gold yesterday. Gold's up big. Now, maybe you think that gold is no longer relevant. I disagree. I still, as a gold bug from day one, say, hey, you know what? This doesn't say inflation is peaking.
Indeed. And certainly, we'll see what the coming weeks bring as well. When we come back, all-time high demand, shares of Delta surging after results. We're going to dig through those numbers, talk about a consumer's willingness to pay up. Take another look at the pre-market. We'll get to news on PayPal, Peloton, PVH. Got an upgrade of J.B. Hunt today. More Squawk on the Street continues in a moment.
Hi, I'm Ben Rizzuto, wealth strategist at Janus Henderson Investors. Is a brighter future possible? At Janus Henderson, we think it is. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. We know that this means our thinking and our investments are helping to shape millions of futures. At Janus Henderson, we are committed to helping you invest in a brighter future for the next 90 years and beyond. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
You seek the key, but first, you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
Delta, as you saw, rallying in the pre-market after reporting a smaller-than-expected quarterly loss and predicting a current quarter profit. Airline says monthly revenues exceeded pre-pandemic levels for the first time since March 2020. Here's what CEO Ed Bastian told our Phil LeBeau earlier.
The demand is phenomenal. We've never seen in our company's history demand for our product and services at the level we are. In the month of March, we had the highest sales in terms of bookings of any month in our history. Right now, we're only operating about 85% of our schedule, and we expect that, you know, through the first part of the summer into the second quarter, only about 85%. Partly it's because international restrictions are limiting what we can fly internationally. Domestically, we're about 90%.
So for the June quarter, they see operating margin 12 to 14. Street's at 6.
Look, I listen to a man who can be critical and negative when it should be. This was the most bullish he's ever been. Delta is integral to our economy. Once again, it says the consumer is very strong. I think that United's going to follow. United has a little more foreign. But this is not the sign of a weak economy or economy that I want to make reserves on. David, look at these stocks flying. I can tell you that American's going to have a great quarter for a takeaway from this. JetBlue. I also think, by the way, that there will be no merger because pricing can go up big after what was
passed. Yeah, no, I think we're both in the same camp on that as are many others in terms of their opportunity to potentially get Spirit to even listen to them,
yeah,
let alone agree to a deal. But, yeah, overall, are they earning their cost of capital yet again? Getting close, I guess. Probably
yes.
Are now, right?
He says yes.
They've added a lot of debt. They've added a lot of equity over the last 2 years.
I know. But at the same time, exceeding 2019.
Yeah.
People
I've been flying a lot lately for work.
And every plane is full.
Every plane's full. And some of these airports, I mean, the Atlanta airport is almost like a joke. It's remember that Star Trek where they go to the planet where everybody's packed in? They're all, there's too crowded. That's what the Atlanta airport's like.
Well,
you can't go anywhere.
I flew Delta.
You can't move.
I flew Delta from Palm Beach where I went to a really cool wedding. And what was amazing was, if you don't want to go on that plane, they don't want you on that plane because it's overbooked. So really, they basically offered you a free trip if you wait like 5 hours.
Yeah.
I mean, this thing's incredible.
There was a line stretching around, I don't even know, for the Delta Club. You had to wait an hour to get in.
Well, this was sort of what Bastian said this morning in defending the government assistance during COVID, that this is an industry that consumers depend on and have basically asserted, we need this. We need to be able to move around.
No, look, I think you can buy Marriott on this. You can buy Airbnb. Now, I know people say, well, Jim, you're being too glib, but you think Bastian's being too glib? I mean, he's fabulous. Do you know?
Doesn't want masks anymore on planes.
I know. Do you know that I left this on a United plane down to Baltimore, a really cool wedding, and they had it back, lost and found, which they outsourced in 2 days.
No kidding.
Yeah.
I left a book on a plane the other day, on a United plane, but I don't think I'm ever going to see that again.
This was $1,700.
Oh, yeah. My book was like $20.
Is it more important?
I wasn't even enjoying it. Yeah.
That's good. I mean, we're glad to see some of the lost baggage.
I never got an iPad back that I left on a Delta plane, but that was like 10 years ago. I'm still mad about it.
We got to go. But right. I thought that United was deserving of a shout out.
That is good. We're going to find out what they print in the days to come. We'll get Cramer's Mad Dash, countdown to the opening bell, and we'll get the futures here as we go to break. We're back in just a moment.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.
Welcome back. You know, the movement of freight in this country and where we stand in terms of too much supply, too much demand has been an issue we've discussed a lot.
Right. Spot freight rates. Freight rates are down. But David, this is one of the boldest calls I've seen in this cycle. Deutsche Bank is saying that J.B. Hunt, a premier trucking company, has come down so much that it literally is pricing in a recession. Now, when you look at this, and I'm glad we have this chart up, I mean, you could argue that they've gone from boom to bust in, well, so do you do it? I say you're a lot of number cuts are ahead. If you have stamina and can take number cuts, you can do it. But this is the same kind of call that I'm seeing for some home builders. It's okay to buy. And if rates are going to keep going higher, the sellers will keep materializing.
So you're not a buyer on this call?
No, but I love the fact that you're starting to see some calls saying, you know what, there's value here. J.B. Hunt's a really good company. And, you know, this is a remarkable collapse. That's a crash. Now, I did say to you the other day that the freight rates have crashed.
You did, and we also, on Friday, we made note of that call from Bank of America, I believe it was, yeah. The analyst in question there who downgraded the sector.
It's a very gutsy call. But again, I think that if you're premature to call a bottom in a cyclical stock ahead of what could be multiple rate increases. So, I don't know, probably a big institution might say, you know what, I got to start, but an individual investor, it's too early.
All right. Although the stock actually ticked up a bit just since we started talking about it.
Now, can I ask you, you flew where? Did you fly to Africa?
No.
Where did you fly? Texas?
Corpus Christi, yeah.
And that was no seats?
No. Packed. And then last week, I was in the Permian, so I was coming back from there anyway.
No, I only
we
asked
don't
that.
Need to regale
I only asked that because I was going to Florida. I mean, that I get.
I'm learning
a lot. No, I'm saying that you're going to places unknown.
Like unknown.
like kind of the late great, unknown. You know?
All right. By the way, I mean, isn't this incredible?
What?
This back and forth between Jim, me, and Carl.
I wish I had it on
a podcast. If you want to hear it again, you can catch us anytime, anywhere, because we are a podcast, right? So, I mean, you can only
imagine.
And I have
a dollar sign represented by me.
Yeah. How popular that is.
Opening bell on the CNBC Real-Time Exchange coming up in just a moment. We were talking about consumer, Jim, with regard to retail. PVH with a $1 billion buyback and a big revenue target for 2025. On top of what LVMH put together yesterday, 30% growth in core fashion.
LVMH is doing this without China. I mean, they really said, you know, look, obviously the future could be worse, but LVMH is just remarkably successful. Remarkably. Now, PVH, I hope they can pull it off. Because I do think that these are very, very aggressive targets for them. And, you know, sometimes what you want is a little less optimism in the face of what we think. So this is kind of the opposite of Jamie. Jamie Dimon gives us, I think, too much pessimism. I thought PVH gave us too much optimism versus what I see in apparel.
Dimon's on the tape right now saying there's very little chance you're not going to get more volatile markets as the Fed starts to shrink the balance sheet.
Well, the old days, volatile markets were good. I mean, come on, Jamie. Goldman Sachs would say you got volatile markets. Count me in. I'm not understanding this new Jamie Dimon. I don't get it.
There's the opening bell at the big board. It's T0, a security token platform celebrating its recent funding round at the NASDAQ. CompoSecure, a provider of financial payment cards and cryptocurrency storage. Speaking of payments, what's up with the CFOs moving around? Now it's PayPal CFO, gonna be replace Biggs at Walmart.
PayPal is problematic. They missed a couple of quarters. John Rainey is a terrific CFO. You know, we have this great CFO council. And he sat next to me at the CFO Council a couple weeks ago. I happen to really revere him. He is one of the most, you know, I put him on because he's so terrific. I never put CFOs on. This is a big coup for both. And if I am John and I get a call from Doug McMillon, do I say, hey, you know what, I really kind of got this really great job? No, I take it, because Walmart's one of the most incredibly important roles. Now, Mizuho came out and said, why didn't PayPal, why didn't they affirm their guidance so that you don't think that something's wrong? And that, I thought, was a good call. Why didn't they? Most of the time when CFOs leave, that's a good time to be able to say he's going to stay on for a couple of months. No. And by the way, businesses, right, like we said, no. So those are the negatives for PayPal. The positive for Walmart, this guy has great technology knowledge. Just great. So Walmart wants more tech. Remember when they had Mark Lurie there, his unbelievable tech, now he does that Wonder Truck?
Yes.
So I understand why this is happening. Though, and I play with full disclosure, my Chattel Trust owns PayPal, and I was horrified to see this. I don't want...
Well, you've been horrified for a long time on PayPal, and you've been horrified since the stock came down an awful lot. Why in the world have you just sold it?
Sold some. Okay, that's a great question. I went out there in November, and I don't have to quote the exact book, but Dan Shulman, who I've respected for many years since he split that off from eBay, said that business was going to get really good next year. And the business, and they're going to go back to their old growth rate, be plus 20. At plus 20, the stock is very cheap. He then subsequently missed the quarter that he promised me. And I'm doing a lessons learned. The lessons learned was I should have just not waited for 2023. I had a chance to bolt, and I didn't. I did poorly.
Understood. And it happens.
I did poorly.
I think a lot of investors would have been happy if they had bolted when that Pinterest interest came out. Now, by the way, we never really got a clear sense
well,
as to how far along
to
that was. That was, I think, a journal story at the time, but it was an odd thing at the time. It didn't seem to last particularly long. I've never been able to determine how close it was, if at all. But that was a good opportunity to sell, because it raised a lot of questions.
It was. I mean, that's why I went out. He said, look, I see a lot of different things. The people who are selling my stock at 180, at 184, they're going to make a big mistake when they see the power. So you have a guy who you've trusted for many years.
Shulman, yep.
See, who
yep.
then tells you that the sellers are wrong. And do you say, you know what, that guy's untrustworthy? But the answer is that, let's forget what he said. The next quarter was bad. And that I have no excuse for not selling. That I thought I could ride through to get to the promised land. No.
Right.
Only
then you
Aaron's
get down,
gonna get
then you
there.
Get down to this level and it's sort of like, well, really?
What's
Am
the point?
I really gonna do it
Thank
now?
Thank you. So that's what I said is what's the point? But look, I the whole point of our product that we put out, the Investing Club, is it's a warts and all. And I went out and I believed a man whom I've always believed, and that was wrong to believe. That's on me. It's not on Dan. I screwed up. I should have been more critical.
Okay. It happens.
Right.
Win some, lose some.
You know, Ted Williams,
he only batted 400.
60% of the time.
Yeah.
He was bad.
That was only one season he batted 400.
No, look, I know it's very painful. And if I don't tell people about that, then what's the point of bragging that I have thousands of percent of point in Apple? But that's what a fraud does. You ever see people on TV? They never have a stock that they went wrong on.
That's true.
I'm not that.
No, you're not.
Speaking of Apple, Key today reiterates overweight. They do say, Jim, that the iPhone SE is shaping up to be a mini disaster.
Yeah, that was a really negative piece.
But that overall demand is robust,
well, I mean,
hence,
you know,
the overweight.
You can't just asterisk that as if it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I look at Unisue, but Unisue, she deserves some sort of medal. But when you look at streets where, like, they're shooting dogs or eating dogs, whatever it is, they're not buying Apple. They're not buying, and I don't think they, remember how Amazon would come to your house in the height of the pandemic? No one's really doing that, apparently, in China.
China continues to be a top concern, as you might expect. We've talked about it for weeks, but it's only in the last week that it really seems to be having a true impact on the market. in terms of the follow-through on supply chain and so many other areas. We know that factories are closed. We know that it's impacting potentially Apple and Tesla and any number of other very large companies that do a lot of business there. And it's not getting any better. And she is not backing off. That is, President, she's not backing off in terms of the
not one bit. And
draconian
no
restrictions on the population, certainly in Shanghai and other places. It's fascinating, and it's so interesting because they juxtapose it with the rest of the world and its approach now to the virus.
I don't know if you follow Dr. Topol, who's on my show tonight.
I follow Topol. Obviously, I still listen to Gottlieb, who was on Squawk Box this morning.
But you know, Topol's talking about levels of immune protection if you just follow the rules and use the mRNA. And I'm thinking about, so let's say you're President Xi. Do you just dismiss anything from the West?
Well, you asked Eunice that question yesterday because I was watching from my hotel. Yeah, you asked her yesterday about the mRNA. And they're not.
Did you hear they do no mRNA?
No. But judging from what they say are their rates of serious illness, their vaccine seems to be working very well. Now, that, of course, is a key question because we don't know if we can believe those numbers.
Well, if it's working really well, why do they have the strongest lockdown in the world? And by the way, even compared to the initial, if it's working so well,
I don't know.
Why not put people to work and give them the pill?
Don't hear about the antivirals at all. Yeah,
now, you know,
they don't have access to them. They don't have access to the
David,
antivirals.
David, come on, admit that you're shocked about what's going on.
I am. It just seems two plus years in.
So counterintuitive.
And the damage being done. But you know what? Trying to figure out what's going on in China is a very difficult thing to do for people who have spent years there, let alone people who sit on a desk at the New York Stock Exchange.
But I will tell you what I hear from CEOs. They are frantically trying to diversify away from China, not because of problems with ports, but because they now regard China as unreliable, because they did not see that they could become a lockdown country after solving the problem. Unreliable. David, people you truly respect are telling me they're unreliable.
Yeah. But there are so many U.S. companies that are still deeply enmeshed there. It's not like Russia, where you can basically say, all right, we'll take the $4 billion hit and we'll get out, or we'll take the billion-dollar hit and we'll get out.
We haven't even talked about the fact that he's massing. He's going to try to crush.
I was going to mention a lot of the defense names are close to breaking out to new highs.
Yes.
Watch LMT and Raytheon today. Not only has Putin declared that peace talks are essentially dead, today the foreign ministry says that U.S. assets that are transporting military equipment could be seen as legitimate targets. And now, Jim, the Pentagon hosting 8 manufacturers to talk about where our capacity is if the war, in fact, goes on for years in terms of supplying weapons.
If that's the case, I don't want to be too mercurial because it sounds a lot like East of Eden. But Raytheon's very inexpensive.
Boeing's up almost 3%, by the way, with a double whammy of defense and commercial jets.
I don't want to say anything good about Boeing because David's going to startle me about why I didn't sell the Boeing, even though I'm not even down on it. He's going to startle me. I'm not going to let that happen.
Hey. I'm your biggest supporter.
Oh, thank
just
you.
Every so often,
you're my number one fan.
I'm your number one fan.
I just think Raytheon,
just like
Greg Hayes, is doing very well. And we still haven't seen the weapon, the laser weapon that shoots down planes that they have.
The laser? Laser? Really? Laser weapon?
Yeah.
I know. No, I know you're not kidding. This is not Austin Powers.
I think it's an experimental weapon that's way too soon to give to them. But how about some planes? How about giving them the Polish? I'm not a strat. I'm just saying that these stocks are going up for a reason.
Yep.
Because this is going to be very much like Israel in the Yom Kippur War, where Nixon said, all right, I don't care. Send whatever's necessary. I don't care about the Soviets. I don't care about nuclear war. Let's just send them what they need. I see that happening.
Oh, it's one reason why the street's watching France, Le Pen, on the tape today saying that once the war there is over, she will propose closer links between NATO and Russia. I mean, that election, Jim, is going to be consequential in a number of ways.
What a watershed election that is. The new polls say that he could lose. Now, she's been a perennial candidate, and
it's the farthest she's ever gotten.
She is a nationalist that is the most nationalist, even more than Hungary. I don't know what to say about that one.
That could certainly affect the NATO's approach right now to the war in Ukraine as well, if she were to gain power. Guys, you know, it's funny. We always talk J.P. Morgan. BlackRock always reports in the same day, and we don't usually talk too much about BlackRock, the world's largest asset manager. If we take a look at the European markets right now, let's take a look at shares of BlackRock. Not doing much. So there is that. Generated $114 billion of long-term net inflows in the first quarter. Positive flows across all product types, investment styles, and regions as well. This is an enormous asset manager, as we all know. Diluted EPS was $9.35, $9.52 as adjusted. And again, $86 billion of quarterly net inflows, $114 billion of quarterly, what they call long-term net inflows. 14% increase in operating income. And Larry Fink also saying a few things as the world continues to face geopolitical economic uncertainty. Our investments over the years to build, he says, BlackRock's all-weather platform positioned them well. He also was talking a bit about private credit, something I've been talking about a lot in terms of its sudden emergence. But its emergence in financing, so many of these go privates lately. And as well, the energy transition. Of course, ESG is such an important component now of the asset gathering that's going on at BlackRock. It's not going to be a straight line, as my letters wrote about. And any energy transition has to be fair and just, or it doesn't work. We're witnessing that now, said Fink. Supply shocks and now the excess demand. And so all this playing out is going to create an investment boom as a combination of fiscal spending on the U.S. part and the European part. There's a look at BlackRock shares up ever so slightly.
I think that one of the points you made, I got a call yesterday about Blackstone, different, but
yes.
These non-banks may put up some spectacular numbers. I talked last night about State Street. They could put a Bank of New York Mellon. Now, these are trustee banks. You know, they're custodial banks. Some people don't want them because they feel like, wait a second, I want to be exposure to rising rates.
Right.
But this may be the key. The companies that are custodian trustees and companies that are able to be serve the role of banks.
Yeah. And they are, well, they're disintermediating the banks to a certain extent from what's been an important component of fee generation in terms of being able to give loans to highly leveraged transactions, for example. That said, the banks are providing credit to some of the actual pools of capital so they can lever, but it's not nearly as profitable, mm-hmm. I don't think.
I think that you're on to something here, David, very good. And when I look at traditional banks, you know, that's been such a great business for them. It's fat. The margins are so great.
Margins are great.
A handful of people.
It goes along with the advisory fee, too, right? When you're the financing bank, you want to get the advisory fee as well. So, yeah, it's important. And by the way, the banks are still participating. But if you haven't, we're talking about the financing of so many of these go-privates that are being done by private credit funds. Whether it's Owl Rock, whether it's Ares, whether it's Blackstone, and on from there.
I don't know. I mean, I wonder whether, I look at the investment banking line, J.P. Morgan was not fabulous, but then again, who expected it would be?
Right.
I just think that it's something to watch, but I also think that if you ask me whether J.P. Morgan's going to go down another 10%, I don't think it can.
Well, it gets to 126 this morning, and that's going to take you back to January of last year. And speaking of which, Leslie Picker's been listening to the calls and has got some more color. Morning, Leslie.
Hey, good morning, Carl. That's right. Chairman and CEO Jamie Dimon noting on the call that the firm's internal model showing that the chance of a severe adverse event in the economy is about 10% higher than it was before. He says he doesn't think there will be a recession in the U.S. this year, but notes he can't forecast the future.
Things are unpredictable. Wars are unpredictable. Wars have unpredictable outcomes. You've already seen in oil markets, the oil markets are precarious. Okay, so I pointed that out over and over, that if, you know, people don't understand that those things can change dramatically for either physical reasons, cyber reasons, or supply demand. And so that's another huge cloud in the horizon. And we're prepared for it. We understand it. I can't tell you the outcome of it. I hope those things all disappear and go away. We have a soft landing and the war is resolved. Okay, I just wouldn't bet on all that.
Relatedly, there was a lot of discussion on the call about why J.P. Morgan opted to take that higher-than-expected credit reserve build in the quarter, amounting to about $902 million. About a third of that was from Russia-related counterparty exposure, and the rest related to risks in the broader macro environment. Piper Sandler notes in a note this morning that this is the first time management added to its credit reserve since Q2 2020, which, as you recall, was in the heart of COVID. Still, CFO Jeremy Barnum noting that the firm has various levers to pull ahead of stress tests in June, and as a result, feel quite good about the capital position from here, which is a reassuring sign for the prospects of buybacks and dividends. Still, the overall results weighing on shares this morning, J.P. Morgan down more than 3%, about 3.3% currently. Guys.
Wow. Worse. I mean, we know this. I guess we don't want to hear from Jamie Dimon. I don't like what's hot. Obviously, I mentioned it. If the Russians are really saying that there should be no one who's Ukrainian, as our president says, we're glib if we say it can be contained. And I guess I'm so used to Jamie Dimon being more confident, David, that I could see how someone might say, wow, I can get another stock.
Well, I mean, he's just being realistic in terms of saying, I mean, well, you no, just don't that, know. I mean,
but the average person said is, but they're not selling Citi that hard. Not the Goldman's up.
Yeah.
I mean, the average person's not saying what David Solomon's worried. The average person's saying Solomon's taking care of the volatility. He's going to make money in the volatility. That's when I sat down with David Solomon. He's waiting for volatility. You're getting it. I don't know.
That's sort of where Fink's coming from, too. Says an environment of rising rates is an opportunity.
Yes.
More than it is a challenge. Leslie, thank you. Leslie Picker watching the banks. So do you think thematically J.P. Morgan sets up the tone for banks this quarter or not?
I think that if you are Solomon, if you're Brian Moynihan, I think you realize what you shouldn't say. I think you should say, look, it's obviously uncertain times, but we got you back. We're going to have rising rates. That does well for our deposit basis. We like the consumer, and we're not as exposed as other banks to international repercussions.
Right. Well, JPM is up about $2 from the intraday opening low. By the way, quick reminder, you can get in on the CNBC Investing Club with Jim. Sign up and find out more at cnbc.com/join the club, or just point your phone to the QR screen, code on the screen. It'll take you straight there. Let's check bonds and treasuries as well. A pretty wicked 24 hours of comments from Bullard in the FT this morning, Brainard with the Journal yesterday. We'll get more, but for the time being, 10-year still a shade below 2.7, which was an important line yesterday. We'll be right back. Got some nice halo effect from the Delta quarter here. Let's check out the airlines leading the S&P today. American Airlines 18 and a quarter, just a shade away from a level we last saw in February. We're going to watch that as we keep our eye on the consumer and travel. And we'll get stopped trading with Jim after a break. Time for Jim and Stop Trading.
When rates are down, when people feel good, they ignore a huge call by Deutsche Bank on Lam Research, where they said, basically, you got to be worried. The bears are saying there could be 20% downside. Now, we have no evidence whatsoever that orders have slowed, but this is the kind of call that 2 days ago would have knocked the stock down 7. So just be cognizant that because the 10-year is going up in price and down in yield, a lot of people are feeling better about things, including, by the way, J.P. Morgan from just 20 minutes ago. So just be aware, rates are down for 2 straight days. 2.75 may have been some sort of level, and people are ignoring the negative today. Now, they ignored it yesterday until late afternoon.
Yes. Yeah, we did not hold yesterday.
But although, I like the fact that it opened down, Carl.
Yeah, I know. You like those setups. By the way, 2-year yields down 20 basis points this week.
That's big.
Yep.
Big percentage basis. David, what are you working on?
Thanks, Jim. You know, so many different things that there's not really enough time to actually enumerate them all.
Yeah. The nickel?
Yeah, that nickel trade has really gotten my eye now.
You won't rest
you mean,
no. until you find
until
out,
I find out what exactly
pennies
happened
for nickel.
There.
It's Lincoln, by the way.
What exactly happened there? Yeah. Lincoln?
Well, I'm talking about different. No, other.
We've all established other coins. That I have no idea who's on any
currency. Currency at all.
Yeah.
Remember FDR?
Who uses currency anyway?
I don't know.
Honestly,
I tap.
When was the last time you actually took out a wallet?
I use Apple for
or
so
change.
Many things.
I got a quarter in my pocket, actually. Who's on
that? DocuSign's up. Anything can happen.
Who's on the quarter?
What about tonight?
Well,
what'd you mention you had?
Okay, We have Dr. Topol. And I think that China should listen, because Dr. Topol is a worldwide scientist who's used everywhere except for in China. Wow. Yeah,
this lockdown is hard.
And they're really eating
hard
dogs.
To see how it ends.
It's awful.
Jim, we'll see you at 6. Yep. A lot that might happen between now and then. Mad Money, 6 p.m. Eastern Time. You've been listening to The Opening Bell on CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.